Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Three, two, one. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. And we are going back to some OG style of recording, no live show on Shooting the Sports. This is we're in a week, well, the first week in over a year that we've had with no UFC event. Carlos and I thought we'd take this time to do a little bit of a refresh and just go over like some of the things that have surprised us about this COVID era. But before we get there, I have to obviously introduce the star of the show, the Arco British champion, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How's yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. You've been getting a lot of love on the chair shot with the chair shot team, guys like PC Tunney, Chris Platt, and Ray Cashall. Really kind of like wanting to see how your MMA career goes once we get out of a lockdown. So you've got a bit of a fan base going, Carlos.
I really do appreciate it, guys. Honestly, it means like everything. And come 12th of April, back in the gym, hopefully get a fart sound. I know a couple of my friends, they've already been in talks and got a couple of fart sounds. So when they're back in the gym on the 12th, they're ready to go into fart camp. So I'm expecting me on the 12th to start the process of what they did. So yeah. I do appreciate the support, and you will see me on the big stages at some point. You will not regret supporting me.
Absolutely.
All the day
oneers.
Thank you very much.
So what I thought we'd do, Carlos, is that obviously we've watched a full year of UFC in lockdown, in COVID restrictions, and at the beginning of this, we kind of like gave UFC a lot of grief for being kind of gung-ho about putting fights on when the world was basically setting itself on fire. But props to the UFC, they've gone about this the right way. Their protocol has been second to none. Whenever a fighter has been infected, they've been pulled instantly, the team's been pulled instantly. Even fighters who not necessarily have got COVID, but they've been linked with other fighters that have got COVID, have all been pulled. And UFC, I've really kind of set the stage on how to control a sports organisation in this COVID era. So I've got to give props to Dana and all his team there at UFC for providing a full year of content, and they have not missed a beat all year. Every week, I mean, we've been doing the show now, what, 3 years?
Yeah, coming up 3 years.
Yeah, and we always tend to have like a big run of events in a row and then like a few weeks off, but we've had none of that this year. It's literally just been event after event after event. So props to UFC for providing that. But what it's also given us is the opportunity to kind of reflect on this kind of year in COVID and give like a few shout outs and a few of our kind of opinions on a couple of topics. So I've decided I think we should pick out our shock of this COVID era, whether that's a match result or something that's gone on in MMA, then our star, our villain, and then last our fight of this COVID era. So because I've literally sprung this on Carlos within the last about 10-15 minutes, I'll go first in all the categories.
I've got all my picks.
I'll still go first anyway because I'm the star of the show and I'm selfish like that. But for shock, for me, there's quite a few that I could actually put in here as big shocks. We've had some massive results in terms of fights like that we wouldn't expect. But I think for me, the biggest shock and one of the coolest shocks was Jan Blachowicz winning the UFC lightweight title. For me, as a European, we've got a lot of love for Jan. He was always a fighter who I thought would not get the respect he was probably due. But Bones vacating that title meant that Jan had an opportunity, and he took that opportunity and he ran with it, absolutely destroyed Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes, who many still argue now was dominant against Bourne's. Jan took him to school, and he's the current light heavyweight champion, and he's absolutely deserved. So for me, shock of this era is Jan Błachowicz.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, when Jan started in the UFC, he obviously started on a rookie patch, and he was getting into that position where everyone speaks of today of like a gatekeeper, but then he soon changed that wrong when the Polish power came out and it was just wrecking everybody. Ended up taking the belt off Dominic, well, not taking the belt off Dominic Reyes, but a vacant belt, weren't it? Mm-hmm. And obviously he won the belt.
But everybody had Reyes winning that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. After when Reyes had that dominant 5-round fight with the ex-champion John Jones, and a lot of people were saying, I think he won that fight, that's when a lot of people were just instantly counted Jan out of the fight. When that fight got announced, that Jan and Reyes were fighting for the current light heavyweight belt, everyone straight away were like, oh, well, we know he's going to win this fight. And I'm so, like, I wouldn't say glad, because in a way, I'm happy for him. Like you say, from Europe, it's a good thing to have a Europe champion. So, only on that sense, I'm happy for. But obviously, when you go 5 rounds with John Jones, and obviously you're losing that sort of devastating fashion, it's going to sting you in a way. But yeah, what a pick. Jan is a brilliant fighter, and
the thing that is what I like about him more is he's classy.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've seen a lot of people in title matches, and especially in that lightweight division, when they lose to Bourne's or when they lose a big title fight, they get salty and they get that bitchy. Jan never did that. Jan took his losses and learnt from them. He was never kind of like a sore winner. With the attitude, he's just gone about his business and he's got exactly what he's deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a humble champion, honestly. Nothing but respect for him. As soon as he won the belt, he straight back onto Poland. As soon as he had the biggest fight of his career, straight back onto Poland. Yeah. He's literally just a true champion to his country. But it's a perfect pick. And my shock of the year is definitely going to come from one of the... what we could have said last year was one of the biggest outbreak of fighters and the biggest outbreak star. He literally, obviously, had the fight where... Darren Till, they cleaned him out, had the fight and the 5-second knockout with Ben Askren, cleaned him out. Then obviously had all that beef with Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, and everything that were going on with Jose Masvidal. And then for some reason, the last couple of weeks, from this massive star and everyone loving him to everyone sort of fucking hating him for jumping on the bandwagon with Jake Paul boxing aspect. Obviously, Jake Paul is fighting Ben Askren. Don't know when the date is. Don't really care, because it's going to be a shit fight. But yeah, Masvidal is apparently helping Jake Paul get prepared for the fight with Ben Askren. I don't know why, because it's a boxing fight. It's not a... I'm guessing he was saying when he was doing practice for him, he was practicing for a flying knee. So I don't know what stand-up he's been looking at of Ben's. And we all know Ben's not a stand-up fighter, he's a boxer, but... Ayo. But yeah, with Masvidal, even though he lost the fight with Usman, and he got, what were it, like 50-40 something, he absolutely got dominated.
Yeah.
Everyone was still behind him, because most of the majority of that fight were Usman stomping on his foot. So for him to be this massive star and get all this love behind him, Street Jesus, to supporting a fucking clowny YouTuber who now thinks he's a boxer, it's just bizarre and beyond me. It's like he's just turned his whole fan base around and he's shot himself in the foot.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, and it is what it is. Sometimes when you take that, these essentially street fighters, and you make big stars, and when you put them on these pedestals, they don't perhaps live up to the heart that you want them to live up to. They're not like these role models. He's a street hardened fighter. He's not someone who you would go to for sensible political debate, I suppose. He's not going to make great choices. He's not like a role model. He's a fighter at the end of the day, and he's got the fighter's mentality. But yeah, it's the come down from the Jorge Masvidal kind of hype train to him being so cringe, it's unreal. I mean,
I can understand why he's done it. Obviously, he's got the fight again with Usman, and then he's using that as a selling point. His name's in everyone's mouth just because of what's happened with Jake Paul. Obviously, Jake Paul has made a shit ton of money off YouTube and that lot, and that's what he's good at. He's a YouTuber,
and that's
what he's famous. And I'm guessing is that he's paying him a good whack for being in his corner.
Yeah, and I think that's. At the end of the day, you can't fault Jorge for that. He knows that he's probably got a limited window where he can use his fame to make bank.
Oh, yeah,
and he's doing it. Us in that position, we'd probably do the same. But on the outside, it does kind of like make you think, Jesus.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Like, if on the. Oh, well, saying that though, and now I know how it's gone, now I've seen the outcome, I probably might not have done it, but then, yeah, he's, like I say, he's a fighter for the UFC, he's making at best, 500 to 600 grand, I don't know how much he made for that Usman fight, but I'm guessing that's where his money maker fight, his biggest pay in the UFC to date, that would just be off the top of my head, but like, you'd be supposed on championship fight, he's going to get paid to do that, but... Yeah, it's still not enough as what boxing people get paid. So, yeah, you can understand why he's done it, but the outcome, I don't know if I were to do it. Now, if I could control the outcome, I would do it. I'd do it, but I wouldn't go fucking live when they're doing a press conference. Tell him I like his flip-flops.
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning of this like run with Jorge, that would have been hilarious. Like the kind of like a three-piece and a sword of stuff. But now it comes off as cringe.
Now I just can't wait for Leon to just...
Spin his jaw.
Yeah, it's just swatting.
So next, I think we'll go to a villain of this era. And for me, there's been a couple really standout ones. The most notable has happened over the last couple of weeks with Dana White making John Bones Jones kind of like have to almost beg for the fight that against Ngannou, the fact that he left the light heavyweight division for to become like a two-weight champion, and the guy wants paying what he feels is worth, whether he's worth that or not, that's between him and the company. But the way that Dana and the UFC have kind of belittled John and kind of hung Derek Lewis as a carrot, as if anyone wants to watch Lewis versus Ngannou 2, no thank you. I feel that Dana has lived up to his kind of douchey mentality, but that doesn't win it for me. What wins it for me is Ottman, Azatev, and his whole team. Fairly early into the COVID protocol, one of the member of his teams all took off their wristbands to prove that they didn't have COVID, that they'd passed the test to get into the UFC Fight Island event. They all took their wristbands off, handed them to somebody else to sneak in some kind of fucking James Bond spy shit, crawling across windows and hanging off drain pipes, and these guys think they're Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
They planned that. That were a GTA yeah. Heist at its fullest.
And they smuggled a bag in. Now, Dana White said at a press conference he has no idea what was in this bag. They have no idea where this guy came in or got out. And then it turns out that in the bag... was potatoes, and that's not a euphemism. I'm not on about that. Something else, actual from the ground, make them into chips, potatoes.
The absolute love of Ireland to wear in that bag. Absolute love of Conor McGregor in that bag.
Yeah. So for me, that makes him and his team the biggest villains of the year, because they would have got away with it if it wasn't for that meddling Dana.
Well, I believe Dana when he said I didn't know what was in the bag, and I still believe him to this day. I don't believe anyone knows that when they're oh yeah, with potatoes. And that, what are you, fuck? Who sneaks a bag of potatoes to Fat Island? What? Just why? Why potato? What the fuck were in them potatoes? With cocaine in the middle of them, chipping them off to John Jones. What was going on?
And the issue is as well that he got cut because of it. did Ottman.
No, he got...
And then he got reinstated.
Yeah, because he...
And then he lost his fart.
Yeah, so...
No, he didn't. He beat Carl Murray, didn't he?
But that one on the...
That he was building up to, weren't it, with Carl Murray, when they snuck in the potatoes. But he did get released, and then I don't know if he's had his second fight since, but he has been reinstated with the company, basically. But if he loses, he gets cut.
Yeah, is that word potatoes in that bag? Obviously, your first pick, what you said when you were on about one of your first choices with Dana White. I agree with you on that. Like, he's been, for the last month or so, one of the biggest villains, but the way he's handled certain topics, and obviously with him being the president, he's just a figurehead now of the company with that,
WME, now called Endeavour, but there's also been a bit of news about that recently. They've increased their stake now. They essentially own UFC outright. As long as an initial public offering for shares goes right and they raise the right amount of funds, essentially Endeavour will own 100% of the UFC.
Well, obviously, Dana White still owns some of it,
don't he? No, when you own a certain amount of a company, if you want to take that company private, you can essentially force buy all the shares.
Well, it's,
you have to offer way more than they're actually worth.
Weird now you say that, because I don't know how true this is, but it was only recently I saw this, that it were a rumour, and it were going around. I'm not going to say names, because they're very good sources to me. But there were a rumour that Dana White was apparently speaking to Elon Musk to sell his remaining stock of the UFC to him for a fair... I don't know that the number wasn't mentioned, but it was mentioned that it was a good amount of something. Like, he were gonna see, if not better or the same than what he did for selling it when he did with the Fajitas and that. So that's interesting you say that, because now that rumour, to me, rings a bit more true, because if they're looking at privatising the business to own the full extent, Dana White's going to look at cashing in on it. Yeah. Elon Musk is one of the richest man on the planet, so if he wants to sell it to him, Elon Musk is going to be able to offer him way more than what
But the issue is Dana would be blocked from selling to Elon Musk. I mean, maybe that was he kind of heard the writing was on the wall. And wanted to kind of cash in his chips before anything like serious happened. But now with WME looking to buy the whole company, he could only sell to them.
Yeah, but is the process, because if they haven't, even if they've, if the process haven't gone through yet, and that, like,
they're doing what's called an RPO, where you are they're raising funds by selling shares of Endeavour, the company Endeavour, not the UFC, of Endeavour. And they're hoping that that makes enough money that they can then force buy all the shares of UFC, so it'll become a fully Endeavour-owned company.
Right, fair enough. Right, now I understand.
And if Dana gets bought out, I would, with him being president of UFC, I would fully expect him to get shares in Endeavour to replace the shares that he'd lose in UFC.
Well, I'm guessing, it could be either way, he's still on about selling some shares, either if it being UFC, or like I say, if he's getting shares off Endeavour, selling them to Elon Musk. But yeah, with Elon Musk having SpaceX and Tesla, that guy's plenty of money, he's not shy of it. So yeah, but so two good picks there, and then more potatoes, what weren't potatoes, were the best one. And but I say my villain won, because with lockdown, a lot of people are going to look at this and think, oh, villains, well, they might be shit picks. We weren't looking at villains in like someone being the bad guy, because with it being lockdown, there hasn't really been a bad guy, because it's all been entertaining. UFC has been around every week. So
yeah, I mean, this is not villains as in like a superhero's nemesis. It's just people who've maybe been a bit dickish.
Well, that's it. So my other one I picked, and just because it's more of a redemption one for him, my villain of the lockdown was Sean O'Malley, because coming into his fight, he was still getting tons of shit for his weak ankles, and it's like, and even when he said it in the press conference, I'm going to shut a lot of motherfuckers up, when they were like, getting messages every day about his ankles being weak, and he's going to lose.
And being technically undefeated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad in man, I'm undefeated and stuff like that. And it's
and lest we not forget the podcast I did with Casey Kenny where ripped into, was it
Megan Anderson,
yeah.
And that's it, and it's
so he didn't have a good time with it, but he, like I said, he did redeem himself with that two highlight knockouts essentially.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he finished the guy twice in one fight, so that's he got an handy bonus for him as well. So yeah, he's definitely been, he's had some funny moments and some a bit sour moments, especially like I say with the Megan Anderson stuff. And I'm sure he said after, and I don't quote me on this, but I'm sure he said afterwards when someone asked him recently, he's like, "Oh, it's not a co-worker anymore."
He tweeted it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like the
sour side. So is a kid who has a team around him who tells him he's the best thing since sliced bread.
Oh, he's not too old than me. So in a way, like he's done it better than me. He's like, say, he's only a couple of years older and he's in the UFC. So hey, if fucking sure, you want a training partner, call me.
So let's now kind of let go against that and pick who we think has been the star of this kind of COVID era. And again, for me, there's two massive standouts, and I'm sure these two at least are in Carlson's thoughts, but I believe Carlson will bring many more to the table. But for me, I was tempted with Kevin Holland. This guy did what nobody else was able to do in UFC, and he had five fights in essentially 2020. You can't even call it a calendar year. He had five fights in like 7 months. If anyone has taken the opportunities that COVID has allowed people to just get fight after fight after fight and really boost up their profile, Kevin Holland did that. The reason I'm not going to pick him is because when it came to the crunch and he had the opportunity to be that big next big star, he whiffed the bed. He just got absolutely dominated by a gatekeeper in Derek Brunson. He didn't take the fight seriously. He's admitted as much. He's in there for fun rather than for challenging for the title. So that kind of like soured me on him. For me, it's Chimaev. It's got to be Chimaev. The guy came from absolutely nowhere in the middle of July last year. He was fighting on Brave Championship fight cards to like 100 people. The guy picked up a last minute fight against John Phillips. Then the week after, he took on Reese McKee, absolutely dominated him, and broke the record for the quickest turnaround. What was it, like 10 days or something like that?
13?
I'm sure it was like July the 16th for his first fight, July the 26th for the second fight. He got performance of the night for the first fight, performance of the night for the second fight, performance of the night for his third fight,
which he
left it a little bit. He actually went from July to September, but he didn't take any time.
That's only because fucking UFC did a lot, and then I said, chill out, fucking fight, you little scrapper.
In that third fight, he took on Gerald Mearshaw, who's a handy fighter, and KO'd him in 17 seconds, three performance of the night, three wins, and I would guarantee he would have had more if he didn't contract COVID. The guy has had COVID for such a long time, keeps trying to train his way out of it, won't let his body heal up. He retired, was told by the president of his own country, fuck that shit, you ain't retired nowhere, and only this week he's come out and said he's the champ round these parts to about the UFC, and he's...
Surprise, the champ is back.
Yeah, he's chasing that Usman fight, and I have no doubt that Dana White would absolutely put him in that fight in a heartbeat. So for me, Khamzat Chimaev has been a breath of fresh air.
That's it. It's a perfect pick. So it's 3-0 in the UFC. I haven't even been with him for, I think, what, probably, if I say a year, I'm probably giving it a good one. So with him coming in, getting three solid finishes, and I know he's horrible saying it because it's affected a lot of people, but COVID can't kill the motherfucker, so who's going to stop
him? And he'd give it a good do.
So, it's fine. I feel so bad for Reese McKee, because I respect him so, like I said, guy, he comes from the United Kingdom, so he's solid in a way. So I know how good Chimaev is, because I just know how good, just from seeing Reese McKee train and far, just near around here, near. So it's, yeah, he Chimiev, he's one to be watching out for, and I'm sort of glad they told him off for that. Naughty boy, fucking not retiring. Yeah, they told him off for that, but you knew, as soon as that tweet came out, he weren't going to retire. The Dana White, as soon as he saw that, he's like, shit, he's not... Someone give my bank card. I'm getting this guy a flat.
So who's your pick, Carlos?
My pick for the star is... There's been a couple. Obviously, you've got Khabib's teammates. You've got, obviously, one of the biggest ones, Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
He's... The guy is an absolute animal. I agree with Khabib. He's still got a bit yet to go before he picks the belt up. But he's learning. If he stays on that sort of path, he's definitely going to be champion. There's no doubt about it. He's definitely going to be champion.
I mean, he beat Drew Dober earlier in the month and dominated him.
Absolutely, just absolutely smashed him. And he looked big. And obviously, because he's still young and he's growing, his skeletal system's growing, his skeletal muscles are growing, his everything's growing, his respiratory system, his cardiovascular system, everything is growing on his body. So he looked bigger in the fight with Drew Dober. He looked like a tank, and... He honestly looked like a younger version of Khabib, and if he stays with Khabib, and Khabib is a child of friends of Khabib. He was one of Khabib's father's basically students, long time students. So he definitely knows what he's doing, and with the rest of Khabib's family, obviously his cousin as well, basically coming into the UFC. And I was watching a video earlier on, and he won the fight, and someone were asking him about how the fight went, and he's like, oh, yeah, today's history, and Khabib was stood next to him, and he's like, yeah, brother, you're not ready for English, please speak Russian. it was fucking hilarious. But the star for me, even though a lot of people are probably going to say he's a star anyway, he's not a star in the UFC yet, and that's going to be Chandler. The way he came into the UFC and the way we were able to stop Dan Hooker, and then the promo afterwards, he called out Conor McGregor, he called out Dustin Poirier, he called out Khabib himself. In every single person, he called out, and he's looking. He was looking for the title fight, and the UFC was looking for a fighter that perfectly matches someone that Chandler can fit, and he fits that role perfectly. He knows how to fight. He's been a world champion. He's coming to the UFC. You look at the UFC, a lot of people's debuts, they tend to lose the debuts, especially when you come into a pressure fight like that where it's so high tense, a top five ranking.
How many times have we seen it in that division on its own? Ill Will Brooks, Eddie Alvarez, people met that jump from Bellator, and it's as big as Bellator is, it's not the big dance like UFC is.
Well, I'll give it Eddie though. He managed to pick up the title, but when it came to the pressure of McGregor, he fell like the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but with Chandler, I reckon he's definitely the new king in that division. And with the fight that he's got coming up with Charles Oliveira, and shit, yeah, Charles Oliveira, it's another one out on my list. Mm-hmm. Before it is with him, the way he's been in the UFC for what, over 10 years now or something.
It's been there for so damn long, and always been like on the cusp of maybe being a big star, but never quite kind of getting over that mountain. Yeah, he made his debut in 2010.
That's it. So it's absolutely mental. And the fact is that he's only just getting his title shot now is, I'd say mental, but because I've been around the game of mixed martial arts, and I've obviously been watching the UFC so much, I'm a massive fan of it, like a lot of other people. So it tends to be one of them you're usually having anywhere between 5 to 13 fights before having a title fight, depending on what division you're in. So it doesn't surprise me that he's had like 11, 12 wins in a row before getting a title fight. But what did surprise me was the way he were able to absolutely dominate Tony Ferguson. Mm-hmm. So when a lot of people were giving both Chandler and them shit for fighting for the belt, saying, oh, it should have been either Justin or Dustin or Connor or whatever, then these are the two fighters that the UFC look for. And to be honest with you, if I could pick a joint star, it'd be both of them, but unfortunately I can't. And for me, Chandler has been the one to, even though he hasn't been on the same tear as what Oliveira has been on in the UFC, you go back to his Bellator career and the rest of it, he's absolutely shut down everyone in front of him. Yeah, fair enough, he may have took a couple of losses, but tell me one great fighter, bar from Khabib or John Jones, that hasn't took a loss and not learnt from it and come back. He's the spitting image of a fighter that has took losses, learnt from it, come back, won world championships, come into the UFC when there's a lot of eyes on him, when a lot of people say, oh, he's just another guy who's going to come lose. He absolutely dominated Dan Hooker, and now he's fighting for the vacant UFC lightweight title.
Yeah, and it's going to be an absolute slugfest between the two, and I wouldn't be any happier to see Michael Chandler make it to the big dance, because I know we're primarily UFC fans, but as an MMA fan, he has been a consummate professional. Absolutely been a star of the show in Bellator. Never quite got that. I mean, they've had talks for him coming off to UFC a number of times, and he just never quite got there. And now, essentially, in the what could be his last major run of his career, he's straight in and he's going for the big title.
Well, that's it. He's not fucked about. He's definitely not fucked about. He took that opportunity. When he got that phone call and he got told that opportunity's there, this is the guy who before he even fought Hooker, when he called him up from Bellator, he was already the replacement for Gaethje and Khabib. He was on Fight Island as well, running laps of Fight Island, and he weren't even fighting. He was just in case
anything
happened.
It shows that he wants it.
Yeah, he literally, that's it. He's there for one reason, to be the champion, and he's got that title fight, and he's going to be a banger of a fight. And either way, if Chandler wins that fight, like you said, I'd be happy to see him hold that belt, because he had obviously two different belts from two major promotions, UFC being the biggest. But you've got to give him respect for the level. When you're fighting in the UFC, you've still got a lot more fans than the average other world champion that's fighting for these other organisations. So you can sometimes understand why other fighters sort of tend to drop off, because they may have got a loss or they haven't got the maximum support around them. Now, I'm not talking about fighters like Michael Venom Page or Douglas Lima and people like that. It's generally the fighters that who aren't making it up to these big stages, who aren't getting the phone calls, who aren't getting these big money fights, but yet they're still fighting all these hard fighters, they're still giving it the best all, and then it something clicks in their head thinking, I'm not getting no fucking recognition for this. I'm still doing the same amount of work as what that guy's doing in the organisation. And look at the career he's got for him. Look at the potential he's got for him. And I'm still stuck here. And so you've got to give Michael Chandler the respect for that, because he was fighting for, I think, 10 years professionally outside the UFC.
Yep.
And it that is hard to do, especially when, now don't get me wrong, he's going to be one of the fighters that's making good money, but he's definitely going to make a hell of a lot more money in the UFC than what he was fighting outside of it, especially with the medical benefits that come with it as well, especially if you live in and come from the United States, where their medical bills over there are fucking ridiculous. I feel sorry for some of them, but yeah, Chandler is definitely my star of the lockdown.
It's a great pick. Now let's round off with our fight of the lockdown, fight of the COVID era. And for me, there was only one choice. I mean, we've had some absolutely outstanding fights, but the one I enjoyed the most, and it ironically ended up being a draw, ended up being a majority draw. Going back to just before Christmas of 2020, Davison Figueiredo, the dominant flyweight champion, someone who we've kind of looked for ever since Henry Cejudo dropped the title. Even before that, with Demetrius Johnson, we've wanted like a killer in that division, and he is definitely a killer. But up stepped Brandon Moreno. Brandon, I think he'd only just beaten Brandon Royval maybe a month or so before that, and he was thrown into this.
Yeah, he were only fighting the month prior.
So he was thrown into this title match, and basically everyone thought this is going to be fodder for a Figueiredo dominant victory. Jesus Christ, these guys went hell for leather for five rounds. You got instant starts with Figueiredo going with spinning back kicks and just the vicious punching. You had takedowns, you had clinch fighting, everything you if you like a one single facet of MMA, it was in this fight. You had the hard hitting, you had the knockout shots, you had the great wrestling, you had the dirty boxing. And the best thing about this is they did not stop giving the 100% for five rounds. There was a little bit of an issue in the third round where Figueiredo got deducted a point, and that kind of really did cost him the fight, because if it wasn't for that point, he would have probably picked up the clear victory. But this is a fight that needs to be run again, and I can't wait for it to happen, because this was 25 minutes of glorious fighting for me. I absolutely loved every second of it.
That's it. That were a brilliant fight between two definitely dominant fighters. So unfortunately we were a draw, but then again we get to see it again, so it's a win-win for us and a lose-lose for them. So don't know who's winning in that scenario. Us. Yeah, fuck it, us. Yeah, it's a perfect pick with Figueiredo. Before having that fight, and when he picked up the bell, he was... he picked up the belt from Joseph Benavidez, didn't he? Joseph Benavidez, when he picked up the belt, he was already before that, he was looked at as a fucking killer. And then when he did that to Joseph Benavidez, that just cemented his... He was basically like the Francis Ngannou of that weight, to what Francis Ngannou is now to the heavyweights. And when...
He beat Joseph Benavidez twice, but he didn't win the title in the first fight because he missed weight.
Obviously he learned from his mistake though. He learned to put the cake down and make weight the second time. He were able to.
And he didn't take any time in that second fight to get it finished. He did it in the first round. Then he did it again against Perez in the first round a couple of months later. So for Brandon Moreno to come from essentially nowhere and take the guy for 25 minutes, this guy has been murdering people. And for Brandon Moreno to take him for 25 minutes and still come out with a draw is outstanding.
Well, that's it. And Brandon took some serious shots from him. The shots that have knocked the other guys out. So
clean out, yeah.
In a way, Figueiredo has got to think differently, because you've got to understand, this is a guy, when he started getting the money, he's literally gone out, he's purchased himself a gym, what's literally designed for him to keep that UFC belt, for him to be the perfect athlete, fighting athlete. And with him basically finishing all these guys and then Brandon coming and eating his shots and taking him to deep waters and they go into the decision, that, don't care who you are, you're a human being, that's going to play with your mind at some point, and thinking to yourself, what the fuck is this guy doing, or what did I do wrong for these shots not to be efficient or work? Well, I'll say not efficient, because they were efficient enough to where obviously you could see where he was getting hurt to some extent, but they were doing absolutely nothing in the sense of taking him off the back foot. Brandon was trying to walk him down just as much as Figueiredo were, so that were a perfect pick. And yeah, I can't wait to see that fight again. But just before I say that, we can't not mention the elephant in the room. In the lockdown, we've had one of the biggest, and it's not a... This sort of covers all four of them, I think. This is just a spring on Mag now, so I want to see his reaction. The Petian and the Aljamain Sterling bust up. That is a shock. That's a star moment. That's a villain moment. And that's a fart of the lockdown moment, I think, anyway. And yeah, I think we've got to say that, because people are going to... I've got it in my head, people are going to try and say, oh, well, you did mention this, I'm going to give you motherfuckers a chance. I'm going to stick that in there before you do it.
I mean, yeah, that match had everything. It had a proper villain with a petty Jan and that vicious knee. It had like the hero of it with Aljamain Sterling, even though he ended up being the villain because people were calling him a pussy and that he played on it. He got basically V-triggered in the face. That guy could not see straight.
Yeah, Yeah, but then Stipe recovered about 30 seconds after Francis Ngannou knocked his fucking tree to bars. Mm-hmm. So I saw that meme over there and it just fucking killed. Honestly, I'm tearing up though because it just fucking that killed me. That meme over there absolutely put me on my arse, just the same as what Francis did and what Pettyhan did. So Jesus Christ. But yeah, I had to mention that moment. But my fight of the year has got to be your shock of the year. It's got to be the man himself. It's got to be Jan Błachowicz versus Israel Adesanya. Mm-hmm. Israel Adesanya had the chance to go up to light heavyweight and take that belt, and a lot of people, in a way, when we've just literally been bigging Jan Błachowicz at the start of the podcast, in a way, everyone, a lot of the commoners, even to some of the fighters, were counting him out, saying, "Is he ever going to beat him?" Yeah. Just because of all this potential with the fight between him and John Bones Jones, and everyone was, "Oh, is he just this good? He's just this talented."
He got wrought off.
But Jan's that little bit better. Jan's just that little bit better, and Jan knows this is mixed martial arts. If it were kickboxing, then fair enough, I'd go behind Izzy every single day of the week, kickboxing world champion. But this is mixed martial arts. In that fight, you had everything, and Jan Błachowicz shown that he was not scared to stand with Israel Adesanya, shown that he were able to take shots off Israel Adesanya, shown that he was able to wrestle with Israel Adesanya and keep him down when a lot of people tend to wrestle him. He's got one of the best wrestling defences in the middleweight division. Now, obviously we can see against bigger guys, that wrestling defence sort of lacks a bit, but that was only on the later the rounds when Jan Błachowicz took him down. But that Jan Błachowicz was absolutely goosed. But the reason it was the fight of the lockdown for me is because of not only did Jan Błachowicz prove to everyone, "Don't count me out, I am the true light heavyweight champion," Israel Adesanya shocked me with, he were able to take these shots off the Polish power, yeah, the legendary Polish power that has put people away or just put people down in general. And Izzy were able to eat them and take them shots. Now, we all know from his kickboxing career, Israel Adesanya has been knocked out, so it's possible. We all know Jan Błachowicz is able to get dropped. It's happened. But in this fight, they was both as tough as nails. They both came in. Jan came in to prove a point. "Listen, I'm the new king of this division. This is my division, my belt. If anyone's fighting Bones, it's going to be me." And Israel shown to everyone that he's a true fighter. He's willing to fight anyone, anywhere, anytime, even if that means going up to fight a guy who probably at the time had, what, I think it was 15, 20 pounds on him. So even on
Fight Night, it probably was more.
Yeah, so that fight was me. I had everything I could sort of ask for in respect, integrity and fun.
It's a great pick. I rate that pick a hell of a lot. But we have the UFC back this weekend, and it's a fairly early one for us. Main card starts at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Get it.
So for all those kind of crossover MMA and wrestling fans, you'll still be able to watch WrestleMania. Don't you worry about it.
WrestleMania?
Yeah, that just shows exactly how bad the heart for WrestleMania has been this week. It's literally this weekend. But this is actually a banger of a card as well. We've got someone who could have been villain of the year, Matt Perry, fighting. He's fighting Daniel Rodriguez. Mrs. Amanda Nunes is fighting Nina Ansaroff, taking on Mackenzie Dern, one of Carl's favourite fighters, Smiling Sam. He's taking on Julian Marquez. Kyle Dorcas against Alish Kebab Kizarev. Two of the best young, kind of hungry fighters for me, Arnold Allen and Sadiq Youssef, are in the co-main event. And then a late addition for an injured Darren Till, Marvin Vittori, is taking on Kevin Holland. So that's going to be a bopper of a fight. But yeah, catch us up next week for that. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow the show on all social medias at Five Rounds Pod. It'll be usually Carlos that you're talking to if you get involved there. Follow all the networks at Visionaries Global Media, at Shooting Sports Ish, and at The Chair Shot. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. That's it. Game over. That is the end.
Now, that's for everyone. Before we just actually finish it off, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's already gone to the Shooting Sports Patreon and obviously subscribed. It helps all of us out, make more content that we absolutely enjoy. But I would ask everyone just to please go over to our 5-round 1 and just follow our stuff, and it helps us grow as a podcast. Even though we've got the support of our networks and we support them at the same time, we'd really like to grow on ourselves as well. We've been, like I say, we've been doing this 3 years, so it would be nice to sort of get something out of it, like trying to make content each and every week. You know how much UFC put on events, and it might sound like I'm sort of pulling a leg here, but I'm really not. It's just 3 years. So it'd be nice to just get something out of it, a little sponsor or just a little bit of revenue coming back from the show. And like I say, 3 years I've been doing this, trying to make content to the viewers week in and day in and day out. So yeah, it'd just be good. So if anyone out there listens to the show and they want to drop us a sponsor, message either one of us or get in touch with the 5-round podcast itself. So that is the end. Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.